John, it's an RSN Armageddon. What does it mean for the future of sports?
Not only that, Andrew, we're going to talk about college sports, including the continued rise of women's sports.
Martin looking. Here's Clark. She fires. And it goes! She hit it! What?
And we're back. The Marchand Oran Sports Media Podcast. I'm Andrew Marchand, sports media columnist for the New York Post. He's John Oran, the media reporter for the Sports Business Journal. On the board, St. Ain't So Productions, Chris Mason. And John, let's get right to it. Who's up and who's down?
Who's up? Who's down?
Andrew, our intro was Iowa, Indiana, Caitlin Clark with a three-pointer to win the game at the end. So let's take that and run into your who's up.
Yeah, my who's up is Pat Lowry, ESPN VP of production. She oversees women's hoops for ESPN. And I don't know if you saw it, John, but they had women's college basketball game day at Iowa, and it was a scene and a half. You know, we've said this for a long time, that if you treat sports that aren't covered as much or haven't been covered as much traditionally with respect and treat them as their big time, the audience will come. You give a chance for the audience to come. And so that's what ESPN has done. They've expanded being at the universities for college game day. They have Michelle Rosenhaus giving you that big feel. She's the producer of college game day. And I just think this is on the way up. I think we could see this in volleyball. I think there's other sports that, again, we've seen. I've talked about this a lot of times with soccer, you know, with NBC, with the Premier League, what ESPN did when they had the World Cup, you know, treating these sports, treating the audience who's there because they love the sport, treating them as if it is as big as the NBA or the men's Final Four. And I think the audience will follow, and they got the payoff with a dramatic finish at the end. So just a tremendous day for ESPN and women's college hoops.
Yeah, they made it feel like a big event. My who's up is Patrick Crum, who's the president of RSNs for Warner Brothers Discovery. And yes, I am making an executive who is shutting down three RSNs, AT&T Sportsnet channels, my who's up for the week, and that's because Patrick Crum and Warner Brothers Discovery Sports RSNs are not Sinclair. They're not Diamond Sports. I mean, this is a delicate dance for Warner Brothers Discovery. They want to renew NBA rights, and they're telling a couple of NBA teams, the Rockets and the Jazz specifically, that they don't want to be in business with them anymore. So these are difficult negotiations to have. And it's not just the NBA. Turner, of course, has deals with MLB, the NHL, and they're telling those teams, too, they don't want to be in business with them. But I'm telling you, if you talk to executives from any of those three leagues, you will not hear a harsh word spoken about Crum or WBD or how they are handling this situation. They compare very favorably to how Sinclair has tried to deal with their financial problems. The leagues, obviously, they would rather have Warner Brothers Discovery stay in business with these RSNs, keep spending lots of money on local rights fees. It's notable that Warner Brothers Discovery, while exiting the business, is not getting the same amount of vitriol. And believe me, I'm trying to get them to talk about that vitriol because it makes for better copy. It's a story that I'll be watching moving forward. But right now, everything seems to be as rosy as it can be with three RSNs that are going to be shutting down.
Right, that's going to be topic one. We're going to explain what it means to the world of sports, get your expertise on that, go a little deeper into that and try to kitchen table to it so we can all understand what's going on and what might happen. All right, my who's down, Pac-12 Commissioner George Kliakoff. Now, it's easy to beat up on the Pac-12 right now, and that's not what I'm doing here. But the reason Kliakoff has my who's down is they've lost the narrative, and they might not have a narrative to tell. I mean, we have reported, you know, for months and months about these negotiations here on this podcast. And last week, we said something in terms of Apple potentially being a partner, but just streaming, where will that money end up? So when you look at Fox, they are out. Amazon, we've said they only want a top game, and you know, something marquee. And then ESPN is a real question mark because Bob Iger, back at chairman of Disney, has said that you know, they're going to have to pick and choose what they, you know, bid on and get in the future. I think they're saving up their money for the NBA. And so Kliakoff is in a really tough spot. And now this is something I want to be clear on. You don't judge this situation until the game is over, right? We can report it out and think in the third quarter they have nothing. And then the whistle blows after the fourth quarter and they come up with a good deal. So you got to give them time. But I just think, if they do have that, they've really lost face. It doesn't feel like that's happening. Maybe they do have some kind of secret deal that will make everything look great. It doesn't feel that way, and that's why Kliakoff has my who's down.
Yeah, we're in the third quarter, maybe even the second quarter, but we're certainly seeing the trend.
You think only second quarter?
Yeah. Pardon me?
You think we're only in the second quarter here?
Remember, this would have been the exclusive negotiating window that the Pac-12 was in with ESPN and Fox. And they got out of that sooner. So it's, you know, there isn't really a deadline that they need to get one in the next, you know, week or two. So it's
let's talk about that in a second. You do your who's down. We'll make that the second topic. You do your who's down, and then we'll go into RSNs and then to the Pac-12.
All right. Who's down? Greg Norman, LIV Golf. You know, LIV Golf signed a new TV deal in the U.S. with the CW back in January. When they signed that deal, Greg Norman called it a momentous day, and he really talked it up. Well, LIV Golf's first tournament with that deal was last weekend, and let's go to the standings report. See how they did. All eight CBS-owned CW affiliates said they are not carrying it. That's strike one. Several other big CW affiliates, including one in Chicago, said that they weren't going to carry it. So they were starting. It's not really a momentous day, you know. If that many big affiliates decide that they're not going to carry LIV Golf, and well, the viewership from the first 2 days, in a word, Andrew, it was awful. Golf in February typically doesn't set the TV world on fire, so I would be inclined to give them a pass. But you'd think there would be some interest in checking it out. The thing about new leagues, we saw that with the USFL, we saw with the XFL, when they launch and it's the first time that they're on TV, they get the biggest ratings of the year, and then they start to fall off. People are curious and they want to come in and see. Well, less than 300,000 viewers ended up tuning in for both days. The competing PGA Tour on NBC was for the final day Sunday. Was nearly 2.5 million viewers. So, you know, it wasn't even a contest there. Here's what had more viewership than it. Two women's basketball games on ESPN, Notre Dame, Louisville, Georgia, South Carolina. Chelsea Spurs on USA got more viewers than LIV Golf. It was not a good start, no matter
how. Yeah, I'm getting the sense it wasn't good for them.
It is who's down with the bullet right now, yes.
Okay, not a good day for LIV Golf. And did you watch it or no? I mean, in terms of...
You know, I tuned in a little bit on Saturday, and I watched it for about an hour. The screen is very busy for a television screen. I'm showing my age as a Gen Xer here. I much prefer the cleaner screens. The competition, it's very easy in the PGA Tour. You know, the low person wins. But this team competition, I'm a big sports fan. It was just difficult to get my head around. And even though they pulled a bunch of really good golfers from the PGA Tour, I didn't recognize a lot of the people that were playing on LIV. And that surprised me as well.
All right, let's move to the topics. RSNs, the big news last week in terms of WBD sports, basically getting out of the regional sports networks. We talked about Sinclair a million times, Chris Ripley and company, Diamond Sports, and you know what they're trying to do and potential bankruptcy. All right, so this is what I want from you, though, John, is you're as expert on this subject as anybody out there. Kitchen table for me, what it means first off for the fan who's watching and what it could mean for the fan.
Okay, right now, if you're a fan of the NBA or the NHL, in Denver Pittsburgh and Houston, which are the three markets where Warner Brothers Discovery are going to shutter their RSNs. If you're a fan of the NBA and NHL in those markets, you're fine. It's at the end of their regular season. The entire playoffs are on national cable distribution. You just have to figure out possibly how to get those last 2 weeks if Warner Brothers Discovery decides that they're not going to carry them. I can tell you Patrick Crum, my who's up from this week, has told those leagues, don't worry, you know, everything is going to go through.
Okay, so let me stop you this for a second, if you don't mind. So what does that mean? So if they're stopping broadcasting, and I know what was reported is that you're still going to be able to see those games. So who's going to have control of those games, and where does it go from there?
That's the big question right now, and that's really affects the baseball teams. So it's going to affect the Pirates, the Rockies, and the Astros. And what Major League Baseball is saying is that they're going to get those rights, and if you're a fan of those teams, you can still watch them on your cable TV systems. It's just not going to be on a channel called AT&T Sportsnet. You know, it could be sort of an overflow channel. They don't know yet because they're currently negotiating, baseball is, with the distributors, with Comcast, which runs Xfinity in those three markets, with DirecTV, to try to say, like, you're getting rid of this one RSN that costs a lot of money, AT&T Sportsnet. You know, why don't you just take these games and you can get them, for the entire season? That's a big negotiation that's going to be very important to watch over the next month. What baseball is also saying, and I'm focused on baseball here because this is happening at the beginning of baseball season, so they have an entire season to figure this out. Baseball's also saying that there is going to be a streaming service that's going to be available for people who have cut the cord, for people who are going to cut the cord, and that might be tied into, you know, MLB.com or MLB.tv, and you'll be able to see your home team's games that way as well. So the message coming out of baseball is, however you used to watch the games, you'll still be able to watch the games the exact same way.
And who pays the people who work there? Is that the teams take this over and the Pirates are going to be paying the production people? How does that work?
Yeah, the teams generally, a lot of the talent for the RSNs, those are team hires and they're being paid by the teams. The production, they're freelance. They're paid by, most of them are freelance. They've been paid by the RSN. That can be taken on by the team. The league has a vested interest in this, so I'm sure the league will kick in and help support it. Where the big problem lies, though, is let's take the Pirates.
Yep.
I was told very reliably that the Pirates make $60 million a year on average for their local rights fees from AT&T Sportsnet. How the Pirates are going to be able to recoup that money is... it's not only not a question. I mean, they're not going to be able to recoup that money, and sort of how they're able to move forward with that sort of ding that they get is going to be very, very difficult, not just for the Pirates, but for all the other baseball teams.
Yeah. And you look at the Pirates payroll, that's kind
right,
of
right part around of 60 their, million. Yeah.
Yeah. Their payroll, according to a quick Google, was 59 million last year, 2022. And so,
what a business, Andrew. We should be owning a baseball team.
And here's the thing, and here's the rub, right, where it really gets into the future, is that they're not going to be able to make up that $60 million, right? There's no projection that people who are Pirate fans are going to stream it and be able to – there's not enough fans to stream it, and there's not enough fans who will still be getting the cable fees. And so I think that's where the rub is, and the haves and the have-nots, and are we moving towards – a sort of a streaming service that Major League Baseball will have with some of its teams, but not all of its teams.
Yeah, let me give you a glass half full a counterpoint to that is that they're not going to make up that $60 million this year or next year. But like the hope is once there's a streaming service, once it's a nationalized streaming service, that you can start to at least approach that, if not make that up. The other part of baseball too is that baseball systematically, I mean, there's a reason that baseball has been driving the hardest bargain with the Diamond Sports RSNs, and it's because they want to get those rights back, and they want to get the digital rights back, and they want to be able to provide, you know, with no blackouts, games to for any fan that you can, you know, potentially go. ESPN could potentially buy them on a non-exclusive basis. You go to ESPN Plus, drop down menu, I want to see tonight's Orioles game, and then you can watch that for a fee. they want to get to that, they need to get those rights back. And so if you look at it, they have the rights now to three of those teams. Gotcha. And it's going to be a multi-year process to get that back. It's going to be a messy process in terms of how fans are going to be able to watch these games as well. But it's something that is happening, and there's a ball of momentum now to where they're going to start to do that.
Anything else on RSNs?
We just talked about Warner Brothers Discovery. We're still a couple of weeks away from Diamond Sports and the Bally Sports going into bankruptcy and what that means. And I'm just hearing that the baseball's playing hardball with them. Basketball, the NBA is starting to play a little bit of hardball with them too, because they don't want to do a long-term deal. You know, they want to keep. They wouldn't want to. They want to. That basketball wants to make sure that all the RSN deals end with the 24-25 season when their national deal is up, and then they can really go to the market, and you could possibly even replicate that MLS Apple deal.
Okay, yeah, that would be interesting. I don't think you'll be able to do that, but at least not in the near term. I think there's too many contracts that are long term, right?
Yeah, they're not going to be able to do that long term, but they're also the NBA. I'd find it very difficult to believe they would ever take the finals or the conference finals off of finals.
Oh, you're saying like all the games? Yeah, there's no chance on that.
Yeah.
No, they make too much money and there's too many suitors. We've talked about ESPN. We've talked about NBC. We've talked about Amazon. I think Fox is a long shot, but Fox could get involved.
I was just kidding. They've kicked the tires. Yeah. And Turner, I had that interview with Luis Silberwasser, who made it very clear they want to keep him. And he wanted to get that message out because there's been some talk in the business about David Zaslav saying, oh, we don't need the NBA. And Luis Silberwasser did not say that they wanted that they needed the NBA, but he did say they wanted the NBA and they want the NBA badly.
Luis Silberwasser, he took over for Jeff Zucker as the head of WBD Sports, and David Zaslav is the head of WBD. It's not your father's Turner Sports, or maybe we're the fathers anyways. But it's not the Turner Sports that we knew. I think the point that I took away from your article was Silberwasser saying, no, we still have this tradition with the NBA and we're not going anywhere.
All right, let's go to topic two, Andrew. We did a little bit of this at the beginning. Pac-12 rights. What are you hearing?
Well, I just think it's where we thought it was last week. Does ESPN get back into it? I think that's the question. Can they piece it together with ESPN and Amazon? But I think Amazon, they only want premier games. So they'd want a number one game. They're not looking for tonnage. And I think Fox is basically out, leaving Apple as a potential wild card. And if you look at the MLS deal, you know, could you do something like that? I don't know if the money would be there. I think that's a question. And I think the other issue with Apple, if they were to emerge as the one, they do not go quick. They're a little bit persnickety. And so they can take their time on these things. And so if you're trying to keep a conference together, I mean, you can have some guarantees. We saw the NFL's negotiations for Sunday Ticket that ended up not working. They like things the way they like them. They like the information to flow the way they want the information to flow. And so you said third quarter. I think we're more in the fourth quarter. I mean, you got presidents and athletic directors talking about March getting a deal done. That's March is tomorrow. We're here. We're March. We're in March already. And so I think that we're in the fourth quarter at this point, in my opinion.
I'm trying to Google Roger's thesaurus to come up with persnickety, and I'll use any of those words for Apple and the way they do deals with the league. Now, here's where I'm not quite sure what quarter they're in, but the reason I threw out the second quarter is that, you know, and something that I think you hit on early for the Who's Down is Pac-12 has totally lost the narrative, and we see it on social media. There's almost a panic among people on social media about like what's going on with the deal. We got to get the deal. The Big 12 did the deal. Their deal isn't up for. They have a full season to run through this deal. They have a lot of people that. You know, we're hearing right now today that, you know, ESPN isn't as interested as much as they had been interested in. CBS isn't interested unless they get like the number one, and they're probably not interested in that. We're hearing a lot of people show their disinterest in it, but it can take time. So like
but do they have time? I think that's where you kind of, when we talk about Kliakoff, does he have time to figure this out, or will people leave if there's no TV deal? Because what happens in these is that one university leaves and then it all unravels.
And then everything. Yeah. And then all of a sudden we're in the game ends in my second quarter. Yeah.
Exactly. So it goes, you know, that quickly. It's just one person out there, and the longer you go without a deal with the uncertainty, and you know, some of these schools that are bigger schools and maybe deserve more revenue, they get a little nervous, and then they say, all right, well, you guys don't have anything for us, and you can't even tell us exactly where we possibly could be going. And that's where I think they could be in trouble.
Yeah, here's what's not helping. What's not helping is setting the deadline, which was what, the middle of March now. We gotta get something done. Here's what's not helping is putting out that statement of everybody is in support, because you were a beat writer, you know, every time you see that statement, there really isn't that kind of support. All of that is creating this sort of like frenzy and fervor that, and this type of deal, I mean, if they do an Apple deal, it's not coming in the middle of March. We saw how Apple dealt with the NFL. We saw how Apple dealt with MLS. That takes, that's a laborious process that takes months. The Pac-12, they really do have months. If all of the colleges stick there, they have months to figure this out. The big question is, and what we're both sensing is that there could be one that leaves, and once one leaves, all hell breaks loose.
All right, let's move to the next topic. Apple, MLS, they started out this weekend. We've been talking about this deal for a long time, and you know, it's of course because of Apple and the power of Apple and them becoming involved. I checked it out. I'm a soccer guy. Clean look. I think my initial impression is that if you're an MLS fan, you're really going to like it because there's just everything is there for you. The issue is how many people are going to be willing to spend $99 to check it all out Saturday nights. So I think there's a question in terms of if it works, but in terms of how
it looks. So Andrew, let me ask you a couple of questions. What did you watch, or did you channel surf?
I channel surfed.
No, do you call it channel surf? What do you call it in this new environment?
Well, I was out, so then I got back, and then I just sort of checked it out. I checked out the pregame show, which you could go back and check out. And then I'm trying to think who was playing. Maybe it was Salt Lake. I can't recall who was playing, but
I know it was just one game. Do you have an opinion of the talent?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think I can really give you a full opinion. Like, I watched. It was good enough. It felt like it was better than like what they did on MLB. Like, I thought that they, from what I saw, again, I don't want to give like a full assessment because I didn't watch everything. Like, I didn't spend 4 hours watching, which normally, you know, if I wanted to review something, I would. And also kind of tells you MLS a little bit. I mean, I was out. I mean, we had plans, you know, with my family. So I, you know, I couldn't totally.
I didn't know you had a social life, actually.
Yeah, I know. I'm everyone's impressed. I thought it came on, it worked. I mean, that's the thing. We talked about this, you know, it's different than Thursday night football.
Did you watch the wraparound show?
No, I just watched the pregame show and I checked out a game. So I mean, I wasn't like, let me watch every, like I told you this before, the problem, and maybe this changes over a decade. The problem is MLS. This is the example I give. If Apple was doing this in music, you'd get Taylor Swift. That would be the equivalent of the NFL. This is the equivalent of some artist, like,
yeah, name the artist.
I don't know. I gotta give some shade on somebody. I need to get like a, we couldn't tell you who Jason Segel is. You think I'm gonna be able to get some random artist?
Go back to the 80s. Say like Aha, maybe, you know.
Yeah, like Aha. So this isn't Taylor Swift in terms of like, so like we've talked about, this was the NBA or the NFL. I think this is a very good plan. With MLS, I'm not as positive it's a good plan, but I thought a good opening weekend.
Yeah, I look, to me, I didn't watch it, but I did talk to Alex Silverman, a soccer reporter for SBJ, who spent all night devouring it. And it sounded to me exactly like baseball. It's like the picture was beautiful. I mean, this is an Apple production. The I on social media, I saw side by sides of Apple's pregame show versus the MLS pregame show on Fox, which it looked like it was done out of like a Home Depot, like, you know, on the demo floor or whatever. I mean, it seemed that Apple put a lot of time, effort, and money into creating a visually pleasing video that goes on there. Some of the things that Alex found to be a negative on that is that he found it difficult to call up replays. Like he doesn't know. He's a millennial and he couldn't figure out how to get watch a replay on it. He thought that was bad.
You mean like another game? Like, yeah, that's why I wanted to be able to go back. And Apple's, you know, obviously usually amazing at this. And I thought it was okay. I found it hard. I was trying to find NYCFC. It was a little bit difficult to totally navigate it. So I was trying to go back and see. And then the Red Bulls, local teams. But yeah, I mean, that's where, whatever. It was fine. I thought it was fine.
And then another point, like, this is Apple. You would think that you could see two or three games on the same screen at one time. And you weren't able to do that. He had some complaints about the wraparound show, which was, you know, it was not Red Zone. Like, they had a lot of commercials. Sometimes they went to a studio when there's action on the field. And, you know, he felt so.
Yeah, I agree. Still, that should be going game to game.
Yeah. So there's still places for them to grow. But overall, it sounded like it was with MLB. It was a beautiful production with a couple of clunky, like, interface problems that that I'm sure Apple will deal with. All right, next topic. Andrew, you talked to Charles Barkley about, is he really going to go on CNN?
Yeah, I'd say probably not. I mean, the most interesting thing, I think when the Puck Report first came out, there was the kind of a feeling that maybe Barkley was going to be doing a everyday show from, you know, when you read, you know, Dylan Byers' story. And then separately, Puck had reported that Chris Licht, the head of CNN, he had Gail King on his list of people he wanted to hire. So what Barkley told me is that actually the idea is for Barkley and King to do a show together. It would be once a week if it were to happen. Doesn't seem like it's that far along. Look, Charles is the best. I mean, he had this comment where he said,
it's my favorite comment.
He said, yeah, he said CNN's a shit show. And so he said some other things too. I used to use that one, excuse my language there, but that's what he said. Yeah, he's just honest and, you know, he'd be entertaining, but he's not doing a daily show. And even logistically, he lives down in Atlanta. Gail King does a morning show, you know, for CBS in New York. So is Barkley going to come up every week? And are they really going to invest in a once a week show? Is that really how CNN gets back their mojo? I'm not sure about that.
You know, Chris Licht is figuring out what everybody who has ever worked with Charles Barkley has figured out. He is a TV star. He has been since they got the NCAA tournament, the centerpiece of the NCAAs. He doesn't watch college basketball that much. He doesn't know anything about, like, there's so many people that know college basketball more than Charles Barkley. But as a fan, I'd rather hear Charles Barkley. He's just entertaining and is able to deliver. His delivery and what he says is he's a bona fide star, of course.
100%.
Another topic, you had a story about Frank Thomas. What do you know?
In Post Plus, my Monday newsletter. New York
Post Sports Plus, NYP yes, Sports Plus.
So, look, it's in question. Frank Thomas is a little bit in limbo in terms of his future. Fox Sports, they had a unique opportunity to bring in Derek Jeter. Jeter is not going to have a heavy load. I think he'll work the London game in June. That will be his debut, the All-Star game. And then in October, he'll be there for the LCS and the World Series. I don't know if they have DS games, but maybe he'll be there for those if they do. So that leaves Frank Thomas. Do you have four people on a desk? You have Kevin Burkhardt's the host, Alex Rodriguez, and David Ortiz. You could point out that, you know, on the NFL show, they have a million people, but that's an hour show. And you got, you know, there's a lot more interludes. It's only a half hour pregame show. And then you got the post game where they have guests and stuff. So do you need four people? I think probably comes down to, you know, can they figure out, you know, how to an extension? Frank Thomas does FS1. And so he could be back, but I think he's a little bit in limbo, which seemed kind of obvious, like what the situation would be when you bring in Jeter and, you know, how many people can you have on set? You could have four analysts, but it's a lot.
It sounds like as producer, you would keep it at three, maybe two. I just want to hear, as a fan, I just want to hear Jeter and Ortiz go at each other. I think that has the potential to be fun.
Yeah, I think three. I mean, I think Jeter is just going to make fun of A-Rod the whole time and give him funny looks. Like, I think Jeter might be okay, especially in that forum. They just like to goof around generally. They're not, you know, they do win Big Poppy's money. And, you know, A-Rod does one or two serious little thoughts that he plans out. And then, Jeter, you know, will kind of make fun of him. I think that's how the show will go. And I think it'll be probably pretty well received. I mean, I think if you have a chance, if you're baseball and you're Fox and you have a chance to work with Derek Jeter, I think you want him on there. It's star power. This generation that now are adults grew up with Jeter winning championships. I mean, look, and the other reason maybe you keep Frank Thomas is you're a little bit Yankee Red Sox. I mean, you have two Yankees, you know, basically you're out to play for a couple of teams and then a Red Sox and David Ortiz. You know, maybe you want to have balance that a little bit more and you keep Thomas. So, but that's something to watch. All right, John, let's finish it up with MLB. Been a big story last week. My who's up was MLB. I thought it'd be a renaissance for them with the new rules. We got a chance to see them. I think most people like them. What does John Oren say?
Oh, the pitch clock. What took us so long? That is great. Where the play goes quickly, the game goes quickly. There's so much more action. I didn't know that this was going to matter that much. I love the extra big bases. I think it's going to add to stealing. I think you're going to see people on the base paths running around. Like it's going to be the game of our youth is coming back. Pitchers staying on the mound, pitching, and then hit and run and people moving. It's going to be I still hate the shift, the banning of the shift, but I love those two rule changes.
Yeah, and I think, you know, and this isn't just from a former beat writer. I think it's good that you could be out of there in 2.5 to 3 hours. Game starts at 7. You want to see the end of the game. If I know most nights it's going to be done by 10:05, I think I stay in there. I think that really helps baseball with your audience. I just think, and I watch a lot, but you know, some of watching when you do what we do is you have to watch, not that you necessarily want to watch all the time. Not that you don't, like, of course you want to watch baseball, but you don't always want to watch. But I feel like I'm going to be more compelled to want to watch because it's faster. And because by 8 o'clock, we could be in the fourth, fifth inning instead of we're in the second inning. We've been here for an hour. And it's, you know, pretty tedious. So I think they're tremendous, the rules, and I think it will help. It could help with the ratings, more people wanting to watch. And it's faster, just more action. We're just getting rid of the dead time in the game, which is much needed.
So here's what I'm going to be looking at this season. In September, are they going to enforce them as harsh as they're going to be, enforce them in April or in the playoffs? Do we really need the World Series playoff games going after midnight? Or are we going to enforce these rules then? I hope so. I expect so. But I think that is still something that's sort of in the air a little bit.
I think we'll be used to them. I think the players will get used to them. I think that's how the game will be played again. And I think it'll be better and it'll be faster. And I don't think it's going to be an issue. I know people made a big deal about, you know, one spring training game ending that way. That's not happening in October. That'd be shocking. And if it does, that's on the players. I mean, unless it's something like, you know, Angel Hernandez, you know, the umpire who is always in controversy, is making some ridiculous call. If it's a normal call that someone kind of screws up, you know, I heard Michael Kay say this on the radio the other day here in New York with Mike Greenberg. You know, the Super Bowl ended on a penalty. I mean, game, you know, because of a penalty, you know, that can happen. So you got to learn from it. So that would be my two cents.
That was great. I just loved hearing the confusion in the booth. It was a Red Sox game, and just the confusion in the booth about what just happened. And the batter was called out with the bases loaded, down two in the ninth inning, because he didn't get set in time.
Yeah, 100%. All right, we were a little bit on a pitch clock. Got you in, got you out. A lot of information. Hopefully you enjoyed it. We have some big gets coming up in the next couple of weeks. But we, as always, we appreciate you joining us. If you can like it, if you can put the stars on it, you write a nice comment, it's very much appreciated. We want to thank Chris Mason, AC Wyatt. They produce this spectacular every week. And so, John, another enjoyable talk.
Andrew, Red Sox Braves, that's who is playing in that spring training game.
If nothing else, you're official. See everybody.
Hey, thank you, everybody, for listening. See you next week.